Calling case number A210096, Elise Ann Onway, and on behalf of minor children versus Jacob Cholin.
Please remember, counsel, to state your name and which party you're speaking on behalf of before you begin your remarks. If you're not speaking, please mute your microphone. I also want to remind you that you each have 15 minutes for a presentation of your case in chief. The time clock appears on your screen. And appellant counsel, if you choose to use it, you'll have an additional 5 minutes reserved for rebuttal. With that said, appellant counsel, you have the floor.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it. May it please the court this morning. This is Richard Dahl, and I represent Jacob Dean Toland, appellant. And really, this case this morning, I think, is very simple. I've argued that I didn't get notice. The other side argues that I have to have constructive notice. And I think that what you'll see if you look at the cases, and especially if you look at Peterson versus Bartels, the Supreme Court case on this subject, is that constructive notice has never been okay in Minnesota. It's never been the law in any circumstance. They have to give you notice before the hearing. I mean, in this case, it says right in the syllabus, the fact that a party participates in pretrial motions at a calendar call in the morning to which a case has been continued on a non-readiness basis does not prevent his filing during the noon hour an affidavit of prejudice, which is effective to disqualify the judge to whom the case has been assigned for trial that afternoon. And then they even go on to say, the fact the party does not appear at a calendar call in the morning, which his case was continued on non-readiness basis, does not foreclose his right to be notified that the case has been assigned for trial in the afternoon. And in fact, is what this, I'll just tell you, because I know these guys, before I went to California for a hiatus for 10 years, but these guys would, if they were in a situation where they may have three or four trials scheduled the same day. I'm guessing that this guy back in 1969 probably had a couple cases scheduled for trial that date and said, I can't do all these. So he was going to strike the judge no matter what, because I've seen him do that in these cases involving that kind of situation. So, I read that case, and I mean, I will note this for the court that since I had filed this appeal, good things have happened. I'm getting notices of assignment in all my cases now. And the clerk isn't forgetting to give me a notice of assignment. The fact is, I got a newly
that,
appointed.
Just to clarify, can I just clarify, Mr. Dahl, does that include in the referee assignments? That seemed to be the distinction here. The first notice had the district court judge's name. And then when apparently it was going to be assigned to a referee, which from the record, it looks like there's two that would have been considered, it just said judicial officer. So are you now getting names of specific referees?
I don't recall. I think they were district judges, mostly in criminal cases. I don't do a lot of family law. I have probably three cases. I think the rule is basically the same. It says the same sort of language that I believe requires. It says within 14 days of notice of the assignment of a referee in Rule 107 under the General Rules of Practice. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. Notice of assignment of a referee. Who's giving the notice? Who's noticing anything?
So Mr. Dahl, notices aside, your client shows up for the hearing, the referee is there, there's some discussion, and then the parties are asked, are you ready to proceed? And everybody says, yes. I mean, even at that moment, there doesn't seem to be an objection to the referee presiding.
Well, I mean, this is a Zoom hearing, as we all know. One of the reasons I think this case is significant is because, I feel hornswoggled into, I come into the Zoom hearing, boom, a different judge pops up than what I'm expecting. I mean, I was a little bit befuddled right at that moment to try to strike a judge. And in fact, as I've often carried in my briefcase, in case occasionally you have courts pull this on you, and this even happened in California because they have a similar rule, if they did that, I would fill it out right there in front of the judge and hand it to the clerk. So, I mean, I was put in a situation where I can't just hand anything to the clerk. I'm in the middle of a hearing, so I can't take off and file something right then.
I have a question, Mr. Dahl. I used to do the same thing, actually, 4 decades ago or something when I was practicing law. The First Judicial District wouldn't assign the judge until the day of the hearing. That was pretty typical. So I would carry one just like you did, with blank, and I could fill in Judge so-and-so and file with the court. You're in a Zoom hearing. You can't do that. I agree. You can't hand it to anybody. But what you could say is, I would like to remove the referee and I would like leave of court to file a written removal as required by 484.70.
I agree, but I just tell you, I was completely surprised. I was because if you look at the way that the pleadings were, Judge Helverson's on the case. He signs the order continuing the case. It looks like Judge Helverson's on the case. And it was a complete surprise to me that I had a different judge. I did not walk in expecting I'm going to have a different judge. And in fact, as I did look on the system to see, you know, the status of the case, and you can't get into these family law cases. And I can see why they don't make it convenient to, like, you know, look up the case, because I mean, there's privacy interest in these family law protective order cases. And so I can see why they do that, but I wasn't even thinking about striking the judge. When I was just checking on the status of the case beforehand. But I think my argument is constructive notice isn't enough. I think Peterson versus Bartels is controlling. I'm not disparaging the other side in any way, shape, or form. I think that's what the rule requires. And, you know, I think a lot of times there are a lot of certain people that feel like they get pushed into these hearings with these referees, and they get an unfair hearing, especially some of the men that I represent.
Mr. Dahl, can I clarify, as I read the transcript, that the discussion, the referee at least was entertaining your client's consideration, number one, if I understood the colloquy between the referee and you and perhaps Mr. Macy, but also in any event, this discussion all occurred before any discussion on the merits of the case. Am I correct about that? The whole beginning of the hearing was discussion of whether you had the ability, your client did at that moment, to seek, pursuant to the statute and rule, a removal of this referee. In fact, isn't that, if I understood correctly, the referee even thought, well, maybe I better take a break, and I'm assuming maybe talk to someone else who had some thoughts on it. But this all happened before any merits were considered of the case. Is that correct?
Yes. If I had, if I had a break or a way to file something, I would have taken that opportunity to file it right there. As I was thinking about that as we were having our little introductory talk.
Can I just follow up then? Yeah. I'm the remedy your client seeks, I considered a bit vague, a reverse and remand to the district court for instructions. What are those instructions you ask that we give? And secondly, would your client agree that because we're in a unique statutory scheme where an ex parte order is in place until a hearing and the court does or does not make it permanent, here the court did, but if we were to reverse because of this error, would your client agree the ex parte order then becomes the existing order until the court reconvenes the hearing, and depending on who the judicial officer is that your client does or does not remove, it then proceeds. Is that the kind of instruction?
I would agree with that. Yeah, 100%. The ex parte order would have to stay in place. You can't remove that until there's been a fair hearing on the merits. I completely agree with that. And as far as instruction, I just basically mean you know, in the future, you need to you need to give Mr. Dahl or whoever a notice of the assignment. And frankly, they have not had a problem getting me in. I was not seeing regular notices of assignment from Crow Wing County, and now I am. Everybody else was giving me Cass County. I practice up on the Iron Range a little bit because I work with Judge Richard Prebitch for a couple years. I was seeing notices. I get, you know, notices of assignment. Crow Wing was kind of, they were relaxing. And that's what I meant by that statement.
Are you asking Mr. Dahl for a published opinion?
No, I don't think this really requires. I think the precedent is already out there. You've got a Supreme Court case on point. So I don't know that. I wasn't requesting that. Particularly, I think Crow Wing County is not following through on this. That's what I meant. I think the clerk is following through. I don't have anything more right now. I'd reserve any time for reply, unless you have a question.
It appears there's no questions. Thank you, Mr. Dahl. We'll turn to you, Mr. Macy.
Thank you, Your Honors. This is my first time in front of this distinguished institution, so I appreciate being here, even if it's under somewhat unique circumstances. I will jump right in if it pleases the court. I think the background facts here are fairly undisputed. There was an ex parte OFP signed. A trial was scheduled for October 26th. That trial was continued in agreement by the parties. A new trial was set for November 9th, 2020. A notice went out. That notice had the instructions for the trial. However, where it normally names a judicial officer, referee, or magistrate, it just said, this matter will be heard in front of judicial officer. Then the party showed up to the hearing. The referee asked if the parties were ready to proceed. Both said, yes, we are. After the trial commenced, the appellant then objected to the referee hearing the matter.
All right, Mr. Macy, so I find that to be a telling point in these proceedings. If in fact, when the referee and everybody's on screen as we are now, if Mr. Dahl would have said, wait a minute, I didn't know you were going to be appearing, what Judge Rodenberg was suggesting, would you agree then that the hearing should have been postponed, or do you still feel it should have went ahead? Your argument that I read in your brief is kind of saying you could have found out, you didn't exercise your own due diligence. So I'm just wondering at that point when the trial is ready to proceed and everybody says, yes, we're a go, if he had said no, does that change things?
That would change things because the statute and the rule 484.70 subsection 6 and the supplemental court rule, general rule of practice 107, it specifically says you can object, I think it's 14 days before. Well, obviously you couldn't do that in a lot of cases. Sometimes you show up at a court hearing and there's a different judge than you expected because of scheduling conflicts or an illness or whatever it is. But the rule does say—
I don't think it's just a moment. I don't think it's 14 days before. The way I read the rule is it's within 14 days of the notice of assignment, which Mr. Dahl is arguing was that day.
Right. And the rule also says, but no later than commencement of any hearing before a referee. That is the deadline. You can't start a trial and then say, well, you know what?
So if it's 14 days, as Judge Rodenberg is saying, within 14 days of notice of the hearing, and Mr. Dahl is saying, well, I learned of the hearing that day, is it his burden? Do we impute a burden on him then to say, no, we don't go ahead with the proceeding because I want to exercise that right of removal?
No, because it does give leeway. The rule gives leeway, obviously, because there's a lot of situations that you can't, you know, you find out the day of. But there's a deadline, there's a cutoff, not to be later than the commencement of any hearing before a referee. That's the deadline.
Mr. Macy, I'm having a little bit hard time understanding that distinction. And it sounds like your client agrees, everybody agrees that basically the case law in Rule 63 is what applies. The case law talks about a liberal interpretation of the rule to affect not only the reality, but the perception of impartiality at all these proceedings. And in fact, the Supreme Court in its decision in 2018 in OCC makes reference to the rule that in that case, the parties had no advance notice of the judge would preside over their joint request for consolidation, and to rule otherwise would convert the plain language of notice, which is to preside at trial. The point they're really focusing on is the parties need to know who the judge is, or in this case, the referee. So here, when the judge says you're ready to proceed, technically, wouldn't it be true, number one, I can't, as an attorney and advocate, technically utter anything officially on the record of this case till we say, yes, we're ready to proceed. You may proceed. Your Honor, we would like to remove the referee. Isn't that the normal protocol? And if what your point being by the rule is now the court's proceeded, even though it hasn't proceeded on the merits, then effectively Crow Wing County or any county could just never send notice and hope and take the gamble. And I know that was sometimes like in the first district, Judge Rodenberry, that's essentially what the gamble was. But it was a little easier for scheduling, and so that's why they did it. But the fact is, when you proceed at the hearing before the merits, isn't that the proper interpretation of that rule? You seek removal before you get to the merits. Whereas if you proceeded, went to the merits, and at the end of the hearing didn't like how it was going, and Your Honor, by the way, we didn't know you were going to proceed, so we wish to remove you. That's really the distinction, isn't it?
Well, all the case law says has... they file a written notice. And again, I get that Attorney Dahl didn't have much time. He wasn't aware that referee Davies was there. So maybe the written aspect of it, but once the judge says, are you ready to proceed? You say, no, I want a district court judge. I object to this. He said, yes, let's proceed. The case commenced. The rule says once the trial commences, it's too late. You waive that. Right.
Do you understand my distinction? I
understand your distinction, but I think once you
there
say
was
yes,
there was no merits considered on the case before the request was made. Your client would agree with that.
There was no testimony taken, correct, or no evidence introduced.
And that language to me, I think I'm agreeing with Judge Sleater's sort of view of the transcript. If I look at page 3 of the transcript, that language there looks very similar to what Judge Werke just asked you gentlemen here about 17 minutes ago or whatever it is. You know, can everybody hear me? Are you ready to go? That's what I interpret page 3 as.
And the transcript started a little late. There was some discussion between appellant and referee Davies about continuing the matter because there's a criminal case ongoing. And so there was some preliminary discussions of whether we should continue the matter or proceed. But then eventually the referee said, well, I'm calling the matter. Are the parties ready to proceed? We both said yes. The trial started. It commenced. And then we had the trial. It was the evidence.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure that I agree with that. And I'm looking at your appendix AA18. That's where they say, are the parties ready to proceed? Mr. Macy, we're ready, Your Honor. And the way I read the transcript, and Mr. Dahl also said yes at the top of the next page, which is page 4 of the transcript that I'm looking at. But the very next thing that Mr. Dahl says is, Your Honor, do I have a right to request a district judge? So it seems like he wasn't saying, I'm fine, let's proceed with the trial. I read that as he's saying, I'm okay to go. And the very first thing I want to talk about is I want a different presiding officer.
Okay. And I read it as being once the trial commences, we both said agree, the trial started. I understand that right after that, Attorney Dahl brought it up. But also the requirement is supposed to be in writing. He could have asked for a short recess to file a writing. You know, the fact that it was over Zoom doesn't preclude someone for asking for a short recess or for, you know, even the court cases that he cited. I think it was Lanner v. Commission. I'll forget the name. I think it was, let me see, Lanner's v. Commission of Public Safety. The appellant found out 20 minutes before the hearing who the judge would be. And that's about what we had here. And so in that case, he quickly filed a request to remove the judge before the hearing started. Same with in Jones v. Jones and the Peterson v. Bartels, the appellant found out 30 minutes before the trial started who the judge would be. and then properly and timely filed before the trial started a notice or a request to remove that judge.
Right. And that I don't think there's much question that that has to be the rule. That is what the statute says. Here's my next question. What do we do with the fact that this was done by video or Zoom or whatever we're doing right now? I'm so old, I don't know what we're doing right now. But if we're doing a thing like this and the statute requires a writing, what ought we to do with that? What if you were called upon right this minute to file something in writing with this court?
I would have to ask for a short recess so I could e-file something. The written request for a removal of the referee is, I think the template is one sentence long. So between drafting it and e-filing it, it probably would have taken, I don't know, 5 minutes. Again, I was aware referee Davies was on the case. When I saw
everyone seems to agree that you knew that.
Because I made a phone call once I saw the judicial officer wasn't
there. Part of my question, let's go back. That's a little bit further. Part of your argument is, well, hey, I found out. You can find out. You know, we obviously worry about judicial efficiency, judicial economy. So how could he have found out?
Well, what I did is once I got the notice, I wasn't at the first hearing. I jumped in a little later and I got the notice and it said, the trial will be heard in front of judicial officer. I took that as meaning, well, the court administration didn't name one or didn't have one scheduled. So I want to find out who that is. So I called them 8-10 days before the trial. And, you know, I can't remember how long it took, 2 minutes. And they told me, oh, it's referee Davies. It was just an act that I didn't think about. It to me, it was common sense. I wanted to know who that judicial officer would be. And I found out, and I just moved on. I knew who the judge was going to be, in this case, the referee. I think it was, we got notice that there was an unknown variable.
Can I just clarify, Mr. Macy, though, that, and I didn't see any law in your brief that in order for a person to remove a particular judge, that they have to have the onus. And in fact, the Supreme Court decision I referenced in 2018 even made the reference that it rejected the argument. It was readily apparent who the judicial officer might be. My question to you is that, again, if there's no dispute that the rule was not complied with in terms of meaning there was notice of a referee. So everybody agrees with that. And secondly, I'm having a little bit of a hard time about this obligation. So that's the critical issue we're talking about, the right to remove. But the colloquy at the beginning of the transcript, again, suggests the referee was open to the colloquy of whether she could be removed. So it wasn't an issue of a lack of writing. If simply the judge, a referee, made a legal conclusion that you may not, and that's what we're reviewing. And so sure. I'm having a little hard time understanding how he could even wave it in front. That's what I would do, Judge Roenberg, by the way. I think I'd quickly write it down and then circle it. You see, here's my written notice, but I can't imagine our decision hinges on that technology or lack of technology that Judge Sleater would have. I don't know if that's a formal question, but you can respond.
I know what you're talking about. I mean, the initial problem was it didn't name the judge, and then it led up to the situation where Attorney Dahl doesn't feel like he had a fair opportunity to remove the referee. And so then the question is, what is a fair opportunity? The rule is unambiguous in this language, and I didn't find any cases that said you could just kind of, well, close enough. And again, I understand what you're saying is that, well, after the trial was commenced, the first thing he did was request a district court judge. But I'm saying the trial had already commenced, and the rule says once it commences, it's too late. And I can understand waiving the written requirement because we're over Zoom now, and the idea of filling something out and e-filing it is a bit of a burden. But the fact that it was untimely, I think that's dispositive.
The way I read the transcript, the referee was willing to consider, this is follows up on what Judge Sleater was just asking about. It looks like the referee was willing to consider it, and that your primary argument was, I have a witness here who traveled all the way from Duluth.
He took the day off from work, and we were sat together in the room. I was ready for trial, and I didn't see the point of delaying it.
Right, but your argument at that point was not, it wasn't done timely or it wasn't done in writing. Your argument was it was going to be very inconvenient, as it certainly would have been for this witness.
Yeah, it would have been inconvenient. And if the referee had said, let's delay it, I wouldn't have made a stink about it. But I was ready to go, and I didn't see any reason. I knew it was going to be referee Davies. I didn't see any reason to delay it. I mean, I was probably not as informed about this particular rule and statute with regards to removing a referee at the time. And so I didn't make those arguments. And I would just point out also, you know, the evidence here is pretty one-sided. The appellant did not file a review, an independent review by the district court judge. And oftentimes, you know, that's the equivalent of a motion for a new trial or a motion for amended findings. And oftentimes it's sort of expected that the district court will be a little more, will fudge the rules, especially in family court. And they have a little more discretion. And I think by skipping that process, the appellant sort of harmed his case. I think if he would have done that, again, I think the district court judge would have been a little more understanding to go outside the clear language of Rule 107. I see my time's almost up. Any questions?
It appears not. Mr. Macy, Mr. Dahl, you'll have the last word.
Yeah, just briefly, I think it's problematic. If I have to call the court to get a notice, let's assume, like counsel suggested, that I call and I talk to the court administration, and I talk, they're very polite, they're nice people. And I have a clerk say, oh, it is referee such and such on this case. And then I go ahead and I file a strike. I'm filing a strike of someone, I don't have anything in writing that that's actually the person. Because up to the point where you walk in to the hearing, you know, you really don't know. Is that the person that's going to be there? Because the clerk could have been mistaken, all kinds of things. This is why we have the rule, I think, the way that it's been laid out for, I don't know, a long time, that the rule's been this way. And I think it's a good rule. I think we should stick with it. And I think more to the comment, what I'm really asking is a reversal and an instruction to the Crow Wing County to give me a notice of assignment. And then I can either decide to strike or move forward. But that's really all I had to ask. Is there any questions?
It appears not. I should resist this commentary, but I can't help myself. We have three former trial court judges, and litigants always knew who was going to be presiding because they just look at the car in the one judge county courthouse. And if the car wasn't there, then you knew it was some other judge because there's only one judge. All right. I understand the difficulties. It's very interesting. The arguments will help us, assist us in making our decision. The matters are deemed submitted, which means an opinion will be issued within the statute. Thank you for appearing today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Have a good day.